Welcome back, everyone.
Yes, welcome.
Well, it's time to tackle some kind of giant overarching enterprise application.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a little app, but we're talking an end-to-end thing that's literally huge, and we'll be straining the limits of my laptop to pull this off, you know? So let's dive right into it. There's definitely a lot to cover here, and I want to get through all this. All right. So first thing I want to talk about is just some general enterprise mobility concepts. And again, this whole focus of this is kind of at an architecture level. It's also at a kind of a mobile strategy level for corporations. So definitely that's kind of where I'll be coming from when I think about it. I'm going to talk about how you can build mobile middleware that runs on-premise in your data center using SQL Server 2012 and IIS. And then how to securely publish your enterprise data out to the internet. And then last but not least, you're going to consume that data and work with it offline on Windows Phone. And then I'll talk about after this just kind of how Windows Phone 8 works in the enterprise and some of the new functionality we're giving to support to light up that enterprise story. Devices enrolling, you know, enterprise distribution instead of having to go through the Microsoft Store. So let's just talk about some concepts real quick here from a strategy perspective. So why are companies going mobile all over the world? Why is this such a big deal now? I know it seems like a lot of mobility has been happening for a long time, but there's been a huge increase in the last 3 years. And for most CIOs, it's in the top two priorities for global CIOs these days. So the one obvious one a lot of people think about when you mobilize your enterprise and your employees is you have that productivity and efficiencies gained when you let employees work anytime from anywhere. They can be in the office, they can be at the coffee shop, they can be working from home. You know, just the untethering of employees, it facilitates just incredible productivity. The next thing is kind of this real-time versus batch mode, speeding up the cadence of decision-making, which helps your company gain a competitive advantage. So what I mean by that is so many companies, when let's say they have people working in the field and they're capturing data in the field, I continue to see time and again, they capture that data and either they're still using a pencil and paper or maybe they have a device or a laptop, and then I see them drive back to their office and then have to manually re-enter that data into some back-end systems, which is just horribly inefficient. You need to take advantage of wireless and our devices that we have. The other thing, you know, so that's kind of that real-time versus batch. Then the next thing is the other direction. You're pushing data out to employees that's timely. Maybe you're preparing for a meeting. You're about to meet with a customer, and you've got to do a deal. You're provided with that timely information at the point of activity. So not later, not before, but right there at that point of activity. You're meeting with a customer. You're doing something. And so having that timely information through wireless networks. And then when your whole workforce is mobile, it allows you to just rapidly adjust the way they work as conditions change versus being, you know, bolted to a desktop and tethered. The big thing here, and I kind of said at the beginning, you know, with CIOs, this being top mobility being top of mind right up there with cloud and other things, is what CIOs want to do these days is they want to extend their back-end systems. So those are databases and big ERP, CRM, big systems, and custom systems out to their mobile devices to, you know, help their employees. So how does a company actually do this? Well, I kind of jokingly say up there wireless and some other stuff. It is these devices. It's smartphones like Windows Phone 8. It's tablets like WinRT running on the Surface and tablets from our OEM partners working together. So some applications, some back-end systems that your company might have, they may be vertically integrated, and what that means is there's a back-end system here, and they've built a client app that runs on the mobile platform that you happen to be using, and they provide the communications. In that case, you're good to go. But there's plenty of systems that do not have that. They're older, or they just weren't designed for mobile devices and unreliable wireless networks. This is where something called it comes from Gartner, and it's called the Mobile Enterprise Application Platform, or MEAP for short. And so what that does is it kind of helps to create a server facade in front of these back-end systems that are not mobile-enabled. to face out, to get that data out to mobile devices, get the right data, you know. So I might be pulling, you know, customer data from a CRM system or product data from an ERP system, and I need to aggregate that data. I need to get that securely out to my devices and let them consume that device. So you got to have that mobile middleware part component. The next thing, here's a mouthful, multi-channel access gateway. Think of this as any of you companies that are using Exchange Server and you get mobile email on your phones or you use Outlook Web Access, you're publishing out that out through something called a reverse proxy. Many of you have our ISA server. Some are using our Unified Access Gateway or UAG. You use the same thing you probably already have set up in your environment to publish, securely publish these web services to where they can consume this data on devices. Then, of course, the other part is development tools, and not, you know, several tools to do each part of the equation. One tool to develop client logic on the device, the UI. One tool, that same tool that does the connectivity back to your mobile middleware, back into your systems. And that same tool to do that integration to those back-end data sources and other systems. And then, of course, you have devices running apps and web browsers that consume that data and need to complete those transactions offline. We know that we don't have ubiquitous wireless, so we've got to be able to do things offline, pre-fetching data in advance, caching it, transaction, and sending it back when you have connectivity available. So let's take a look at a visual representation of the mobile enterprise application platform, kind of walk you through the text way of looking at it. So if you look from top to bottom on this, you can see kind of on the corners there, you see data sources. So those might be back-end databases, SQL Server, DB2, Oracle, Teradata, things like that. And then on the other side, back-end systems, it's Dynamics, SAP, you know, PeopleSoft, you know, the Oracle Fusion, things like that. Or bespoke, custom-built back-end systems. You will connect to those via a variety of EAI adapters, you know, or web services. And then you have those database connections, you know, your ADO.NET, your OLADB, ODBC, things like that. You aggregate those things together in this circle in the middle here. This is kind of this is a kind of a loosely coupled mobile middleware system here. So you have that enterprise application integration, so EAI, to get that stuff together. And then you aggregate just the data you need for your mobile application. So you're not pulling everything from everywhere. You're just pulling discrete information. And then web services. You're going to publish that information out via web services. You're going to use something, as Andy talked about earlier, cross-platform wire protocols, you know, REST and JSON, you know, SOAP or XML, something that everyone can understand. And so that's your mobile middleware stack. Then, so you see this line going across here, and everything above that is the data center. So you see this circle for multi-channel access gateway. So this is the way we publish, securely publish those web services or websites. It could be your ASP.NET websites out to the internet to be consumed from a variety of mobile devices, as you see here. Some of these devices can securely consume it with a VPN, but lots of them will just do it over SSL, which works just fine because we make it easy to publish SSL web services, and having a gateway that can do deep packet inspection and check for malware. So this is kind of what the picture looks like that you would need to have in your enterprise to really bring those back-end systems to employees to help that top priority for your CIO. So what I need to do now is kind of talk you through how do you build Microsoft MEEP? I've told you what it is generally, but let's get specific about it. You need the nuts and bolts. So what are the ingredients of building mobile middleware with Microsoft products? And I'm not talking about in the cloud and Azure. That's a whole other session. But just maybe what you have today in your data center. So EAI, integration with back-end systems and data sources. That's your main ingredient. You know, you talk to all these back-end packages. You need to aggregate the right data from the back-end systems and cache them in that intermediate spot so that devices aren't always going and hitting those back-end systems directly. You may find a lot of those back-end systems are not prepared to handle the beating or scale to tens of thousands or millions of devices. So you need to help them. Then with that data that you've pulled forward and aggregated, you need to create business entities that model what that schema of that data looks like, so that you can serialize and pass that out to your devices. And then last but not least, obviously, you got to take that and you got to use the web services that are going to expose those entities to mobile clients. So let's talk about talking to those backend data sources. We have SSIS, SQL Server Integration Services, that you get out of the box with SQL Server 2012. And we've had that since SQL Server 2005. This lets you connect in exactly the same way over and over again to all these different packages. You lose ROI if you have to talk to a different system a different way. If you're having to write custom code or use a different, 30 different ways to talk to 30 different packages, you're not doing it the right way. You need a single way to do it so that you learn once, you train once, and you build it the same way over and over again. That's the whole, one of the gist of a lot of things that Gartner does is in getting that ROI is kind of this rule of threes and things like that. I need to be able to build multiple mobile applications the same way. Talk to mobile backend systems the same way. This is when you get enterprise value. So talking to packages, like I mentioned earlier, SAP, Siebel, Dynamics, custom stuff, databases, all these kinds of databases, and then others that I don't even have listed where you could just use ODBC or the new NoSQL systems like MongoDB and others. Messaging systems, you need to tap into queuing systems or service buses that are widely used in enterprises everywhere. So if it's IBM MQ series or TIBCO or MSMQ, EDI for retail and other kinds of transmission of the data. And then, of course, flat files. You might still be communicating with mainframes. Then the internet. In our case, it's going to be web services. It could be FTP and HTTP. So I'm not just talking about how you communicate from the middleware to the devices. In this case, I'm talking, you need to talk to Salesforce. You need to call some other systems that are on the internet that you need to use web services to talk to those. So we have these connecting adapters. So we have this great thing, so I talked about reusing the same tool to build everything. And so in this case for Microsoft, it's Visual Studio. So one part of that is we include something called the SQL Server Data Tools. And it allows you to create these SSIS, the SQL Server Integration Systems packages. So in the case, in the scenario I'm going to show for you, because I'm going to try to keep it simple because I'm doing it shortly and on a laptop, is I'll talk about how we're going to use OLEDB. So I'm just going to do a data source thing. And I'll talk about having an OLEDB data source connecting to a backend data source. And in this case, I'm going to have multiple access databases because I'm doing it on my laptop. I'm not going to be able to connect to SAP on my laptop. Any transformations you need to do along the way, or it might just be a pass-through, straight through. And then a destination, which in our case, our primary heart of our mobile middleware is going to be SQL Server. Then, of course, one of the tenets of MEEP is you have to have security at every tier of the system, and you can't leave anything out. And this even has to do with once you're already safely in your data center and you're talking to back-end systems. So luckily, we make it easy to encrypt those SSIS packages and those data pathways going to back-end systems. So let's take a visual look at what that looks like. So if this kind of cloud, looks like your private cloud that your enterprise is using, you kind of see SQL Server at the heart of that. And then the gear-looking thing above that is being your SSIS adapters. And this is kind of like your Swiss Army knife, your universal way to talk to web services, databases, message buses, all kinds of back-end packages. And you're going to use that to uniformly pull that together in SQL Server. So let's make it real, and let's do a demo. So we're going to be doing all this on the laptop here. Let's see. One thing I want to do is I need to show you some directory structures. First, I mentioned that I'm going to be using Access databases. I know. When's the last time you built some enterprise stuff with Access databases?
You retro, you.
I'm going retro. Yeah. I remember the 90s when Access took over the world.
Escape out of there.
I'm sorry?
Escapes are not good.
Escape out of where?
Your presentation.
I can't do Alt Tab?
No.
Okay.
I have to duplicate.
All right, can you see my screen?
Duplicate.
All right, let's get duplicate here. All right, can you see it now? Excellent. All right, so I'm going to use three different access databases to simulate some backend systems. And I'm just going to keep it really simple to make it easy to illustrate these concepts. So I have one access database pretending it's a CRM system. And so real simple here, I've just got five different customers here. Looks like Andy's one of them. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Who would have known that we'd let that happen? Whew. They'll let anybody be a customer. Then we're going to have a CRM. And why do you want to do that? Our ERP, rather. I'm sorry. So our ERP system, we're at products. So in our products, we have some different things, fruits like mango, and we have quantities. So these are things you might see in a system like that. And then last but not least, we have our mainframe system. And this is where orders go. And it's going to be empty right now because we haven't done anything with it. So what I need to do first, I'm going to illustrate, is using Visual Studio, the developer tools, to do those back-end adapters to these back-end systems. And so we have this great way to visually create these connections to these back-end systems in a consistent way each time. So if I look right here, I have this surface here. And actually, if you go over to the right lower corner here with me in the package properties, let me find it here. I'm going to scroll around. All right. Do you see a protection level? I don't have it turned on, but just so you know, this is where you're going to enable encryption with keys or passwords. So you know that these are all secure, just like required at every tier. So let's dive in and take a look at the product's data task flow. Again, I'm not having to write any code. This is all visual. So I'm going to click on the OLEDB data source. As you can see here, I'm pointing to that access database for the ERP that I showed you. And then I'm mapping it. I'm grabbing the products table that you saw. And then this is the columns for that database. And likewise, the destination is the mobile middleware, aka SQL Server. So our connection there, our Contoso fruit table that I'll show you in a second. And we're going to pull that over to a products table there. And then you can see the mappings between the access database and SQL Server. Well, this is the same kind of mappings that you will do with whatever backend system you might have where you need to move data across. Now, in this case, I'm just going to pull the data straight over. But in other cases, you may want to do some transformations of the way the data is shaped or looks. And by the way, SQL Server has the record, the world record, by a wide margin for the fastest ETL operations. It blows away any other standalone ETL system or database package that has it built in. So you're getting the very best when it comes to back-end adapter performance. It all happens in memory. So what I'm going to do now is let's take a look at the heart of our mobile middleware, SQL Server. So I've got SQL Server Management Studio. So I've got a simple table, Contoso Fruit. This is where I'm going to aggregate this data in. And you can see I've got tables for customers, orders, and products. Now, to ensure that I'm not doing any trickery, let's refresh here. And I have no customers in here. I've got no orders yet in these tables, and I do not yet have any products. So it's time to change all that with our back-end adapters. So let's go back to here, and what I'm going to do, normally you'll put this in a SQL Server job to run on some kind of interval, however you want to do it. But I'm just going to run it manually here in Visual Studio, and you see that it's executed correctly because we've got these nice green arrows. It's magic, isn't it?
It's magic.
So I'm going to stop that. But seeing is believing, of course. So let's go. Let's go over here. And again, we're just trying to illustrate simple concepts. So let's refresh products, and lo and behold, we brought across all of our fruit products and their quantities. Now, has anything changed with orders? No, because orders is going the opposite direction. Orders is designed to go from our mobile middleware back to the back-end system when a transaction is complete. And then we're going to refresh customers, and there is Peter, Jenny, Martin, Andy, and Nick. So there you have it. So let's go back to the slides. And let's fire that up. And who knows if this is going to... Do I need to do anything special, do you think?
Nope.
All right. Excellent. All right. So the next part is not necessarily about Gartner Meep, but it's just about a passion of mine. I'm a student of large-scale scalability because I found myself, I travel the world working with CIOs of our largest global customers, and I help them build literally some of the largest systems in the world. Sometimes I'm going there to help with mobile devices, and you might be surprised that maybe the smallest amount of time I spend is on mobile code. I find myself probably spending way more time on the back-end systems because a lot of big companies want to scale out to tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of devices that their employees are going to have in their hands. These might be smartphones, tablets, or laptops. Remember, a laptop is still a mobile device. It just seems a little bigger, doesn't it? But they're getting thinner, aren't they, Andy?
Yeah.
All right, so scaling out is part of it. And we've got something built into our mobile middleware, SQL Server 2012, that's going to help us scale out. It's called replication. We have this thing called transactional replication. So a lot of times when you think of scaling out, you might think of, oh, I'm going to load balance some web servers and then point back to a single database. That will take you some kind of distance from the original, I put everything on one box, but it won't take you far if you need to do massive scaling. So what you have to do is be able to do horizontal scaling of databases along with scaling out of web servers. So transactional replication lets you do that. It lets you take all, so if you imagine at the top of a pyramid, you've got your SQL Server database with the aggregated data we have, but we need to support, let's just say, 800,000 devices. We're not going to cut it where we are. So we're going to use replication, and we get to go through a nice, easy-to-use wizard to say, I'm going to publish this database and these particular tables and columns, and then I'm going to filter them specifically for, and then I'm going to have, from this publication at the top of the pyramid, I'm going to have other SQL servers that I can scale out that may pull down exact copies, potentially, of everything, or they can do some data sharding and pull down just particular tables or particular filtered sets to each one so that the web servers are only hitting designated SQL servers for smaller amounts of data to get better performance. And so most of the time, you know, go with the 80-20 rule. Most people are selecting data. They're getting data. But then there's the other percentage that are doing inserts, updates, and deletes. So that data coming back up from the devices that needs to come back into the back-end systems. You'll have another block of replicated servers that'll handle that for you. But there's more. It's not enough to have scale out and load balancing and have that great high availability within one data center. You might need to geo-replicate across multiple data centers, and I've been fortunate enough to build some of those systems. And so you can use the same transactional replication with our peer-to-peer feature we have in it. So if you imagine that SQL Server at the top of your pyramid, it can geo-replicate with peer-to-peer to another peer in one or more data centers. And those data centers can have their own hierarchy of scaled out, horizontally partitioned SQL Server subscribers. And then beneath that, you'll have all your load balanced IIS servers talking to them. And so let's take a look at what that looks like. So as I go through these pictures here of these different private cloud pictures, as I move forward, I'm going to eliminate the pictures you've seen above and just keep going down. So you're no longer going to see the back-end systems and the original SQL Server. So I do have my SQL Server publisher where I've aggregated data, and now I'm just replicating out copies of that data to other SQL Servers because I don't want to have 800,000 devices hitting one box. I need to spread that out to n number of boxes, n number of servers, as many as I need, whatever it takes. And again, it could be all complete copies of the same data, or I can do, you know, a customer table just on this server and a product table on that server, and that might take you so far. And then if that doesn't, then you start sharding at a greater level within those tables where you're bringing pieces of customer tables and not all of them. You may have multiple servers with multiple customer tables sharded out differently. And then, of course, you see over here the geo-replication going out to the other box in another data center. So that's the scale-out story. That's an easy way to get you going. Then the next thing you need to do is you've got to create those web services, because we got to get that data. So we've talked a lot today and yesterday about things like REST and SOAP and things like that. REST is almost now the universal way the internet communicates. And let me rephrase that, the mobile internet. Every kind of device out there, the only thing you can count on for sure that it can support and consume is REST services. I know that sounds crazy because it seems like we've had SOAP longer. Try using some other tools. I know how to develop across every platform, and it's not that Visual Studio experience with like normal SOAP web services and consuming a WSDL and it just works. It's much more difficult. So you may find that REST is the only way to go across multiple platforms. The same thing goes for JSON. It's JavaScript object notation. It's just the default way JavaScript does objects and takes data. And you know, my rule of thumb, you know, I don't have to build an SDK. If I can build something that I can consume natively from a web browser, just calling, making AJAX calls without an SDK, well, then I've hit that baseline that will work anywhere. I didn't have to download something to be able to figure out what it was. It just works. And so use that across all your platforms, and you're going to be in good shape. Then you've got to create mobile business objects, those business entities that model the way your database schemas look that you've aggregated today together. And so we make it really simple in IIS and Visual Studio. You know, you're going to create these business objects. These objects, you know, they're going to look just like, they're going to look like customer objects and product objects and orders. And then you're going to, we make it really simple to serialize those objects as JSON, to send them over the wire, or in our case, wireless. And then, of course, so we have the performance and scalability. So we're going to load balance out our IIS servers, just kind of like I alluded to earlier. And then you can go even further than that. You know, that might take you so far. If you imagine the most high-scale web sites on the internet that you might be using every day with you and a billion of your best friends, you might wonder, how does that web page load so fast when everyone else is hanging on that site? Well, they may have terabytes of data cached in memory and using a distributed cache. Well, Microsoft has a distributed cache as well, and it's called App Fabric Caching. We also have caching the same way in Azure. There's no faster query against a database than the one you don't have to make. If that data can already be cached in a distributed cache, and what that means is not just output caching like you may have learned with ASP.NET, where on a single box data can be cached readily to get it faster. If I have a massively scaled out system with horizontally partitioned databases and massively load balanced IIS servers, I need to be able to hit that cache from wherever someone hits or in another data center. So I need to do that, a distributed cache that runs across the servers in memory and keeps it all in RAM. And so it kind of in a simple name value pair. Well, we make it easy to do that so that those, that first time you query the database, you may go all the way to the database, but then what happens is then we cache that answer and the query you use to get it in this distributed cache. So the next person can just pull it. So it's the difference between disk I/O and pulling it out of memory in milliseconds or nanoseconds. It makes a huge difference. Remember, this is all about user experience. You want your customer to be delighted on their mobile device. You didn't realize that you'd have to be worried about that all the way back in your data center, but you do. And then, of course, part of the tenet of MEEP and part of common sense in our world where people, you know, security is just climbing up the list to be the most important thing in IT now, because people are just, the hacking that's going on at companies and governments today is at an unprecedented level. And mobile devices, while have the most promise for productivity, they also can be a endpoint that's open to security attacks and all along the way. So we need to lock it down at every step of the way. So make sure that you're using SSL and basic authentication to secure that data in transit. Now, I say basic authentication. I know that sounds really old school. But again, remember, I'm talking about something that works with every device. And so you need to think like that. Don't use a security mechanism or an auth mechanism that won't support every device. So let's see what it looks like in a picture. So now you see our IIS servers, they're just talking to the distributed, replicated SQL servers to get their data. They're not talking to the main SQL server anymore. And so, again, it could be as many SQL servers as you need, and then the IIS load balances easily. We have a built-in load balancing feature in SQL Server. In IIS, in Windows Server to do that. And, of course, we have clustering for your databases. And so those are load balanced. And then if you see in here, App Fabric Caching, that's a layer in there as well so that you can get that in-memory high-speed performance. So let's take a look at a demo. I don't know if a new feature we have that we released recently, kind of with the new version of Visual Studio, part of ASP.NET, MVC4, is this new web API. Why it's important is it makes it real simple. You know, I typically have used WCF, both on-premise and in Azure, to build REST and JSON services, whether I'm talking to databases or Azure Table Storage, NoSQL. Well, there's such a demand for these REST and JSON services that it made sense to create an easy way to get those out to devices, since that seems to be the most popular way to do it. The web API out of the box makes it super simple for you to do that. So let's take a look and see what that looks like. All right. So let's go into one of our many copies of Visual Studio. We'll go into the Contoso web API. And so in here, it's kind of, anyone that's worked with MVC knows that we have controllers and we have models, not to be confused with MVVM. Mm. It's just old school MVC that everybody knows about, right? So I mentioned you've got to model the schema. So I have real simple, here's a customer object. And so just real simple getter and setters on an ID and name, just like you saw in the database. Product, same way, we just added quantity. So no rocket science here at all. This is real simple stuff. And then because I'm going to use those, so I'm going to hydrate those objects and then serialize them as JSON. And what you find out is you get that just automatically. Controllers, we make it real easy. So here's an example of a customer controller. You know, actually, the best way to describe this to you is if you'll give me permission to do some F10 and some F11 stepping through code, that's probably the best way to describe things to you. The great thing with this is I can test it even without building a client. So maybe I don't own a device. I haven't even installed the emulator tools or anything yet. But I can test this in Internet Explorer. So I'm just going to run this now. And what this code's going to do is it's going to connect to the SQL Server to the aggregated data we pulled over using SSIS. And so I'm waiting, and I'm calling localhost. And so I followed all the steps that Andy talked about, how you need to get your system ready to work with Hyper-V-based emulators. So I'm actually going against IIS directly in this case. And so right here, I can test it right in the address bar, which is great for productivity. So I want to test products. And so I'm just going to hit that. And sure enough, I hit a breakpoint, and we start pulling back stuff. So in this case, I'm just going to pull back all the products. So let's start stepping through this code. So you can see I'm just doing your typical SQL Server connection. I'm creating a command object. I'm opening the database. The simplest SQL code you've ever seen. Just select ID, name, and quantity from products. And then I'm going to do the get a data reader and execute that. I'm going to test to make sure that the data reader is not equal to null and make sure it also has rows so I don't waste time newing up other objects. I'm trying to conserve memory and be fast. So what I did is I showed you earlier, I created those models. So I have a product class that I'm going to new up a product. And then, of course, since I might send back a collection of objects, of product objects, I'm going to create a generic list of type product and create this new list so that I can hold them in there. And so then as I go through the data reader going forward through here, I create a new product. And I know we all love tooltips, so let me just highlight product here, and hopefully it's large enough. And you can see, first pass through, there it is, 1, mango, and 10 for the quantity. So this is actually working, that's always a plus. And then I add it to the list as I go through. So product list, count is 1, and we'll just go through one more, and then we'll blast out of here. And so you can see how easy this code is to create a REST-based system and just fill up with JSON. It's real simple. So I'm just going to hit continue now. And this, there's nothing tinier than doing this type of code to build the tiniest. Look at this. Now, granted, I'm not bringing back very much data, but it's only 195 bytes to return this JSON format. And look how succinct this is. There is no extra anything in here. So, and if you got the great code that Andy talked about with the compression and applied compression to the 195 bytes, we're talking really small, Smallville, if you will.
Smallville.
Yes. So there's no more succinct way of doing data save using binary serialization, which we don't want to do because we may block certain platforms. So there we go. We've tested it. We know it works. And so let's go back to the presentation. Wait for it. Alrighty. So the next thing you're going to need to do, since we're doing this in your data center, it's not from the cloud, You need, how do I get that data securely out of my corporate data center, my private cloud, and out to the internet where it can be consumed by devices? Well, Forefront is the answer. Unified Access Gateway is UAG, which is our security product for at the perimeter that you might run in your DMZ. You know, so if you have your front firewall, they may be hardware firewall appliances, and then UAG might sit in between those. Obviously, part of the whole securing at every tier, we're going to secure that gateway with a cert. And then that gateway is listening for incoming web requests from the external IP coming in from your front firewall, and it's going to route it back to either a website, or if you have load balanced websites, to a virtual IP address that you're either using from the load balancing built into Windows Server or through maybe a hardware appliance like F5 or something, or from Cisco or something like that. You'll have to update your DNS, because people on the outside want a friendly name to hit this, even though they're reverse proxying into a private place inside CorpNet. And so, and also you have to have a path, because ultimately this is going to point back not only to the virtual IP address, but ultimately to a virtual directory on one or more IIS servers. You have the choice of either terminating and offloading that. You can terminate and offload the SSL traffic, because of course you're wrapping your data in transit in SSL as it's coming through. You can terminate that at UAG if you want to, and then have it non-encrypted going back to the load balance servers, or you can use SSL bridging and just pass that SSL all the way through. You also have the option of looking into the packets, whether they're encrypted or not, because you're in control of the encryption key. You can open those packets and inspect, do deep inspection for malware to ensure that nothing bad's getting into your enterprise. You also can pre-authenticate, because obviously we're going to use, you know, the one of the crown jewels of Microsoft networking is Active Directory and users and groups and all that you get from that. You can pre-authenticate with constrained delegation out in the DMZ, or you can pass it back to the website, and then there when it hits the virtual directories, the users and groups will get to see what they're allowed to see and not see what they're not allowed to see. And as I said before, you can inspect both clear and encrypted packets for malware. One of the takeaways here that you may not have thought about is you didn't have to set up a VPN to do this. You got the same high-level security of SSL all the way, and you're only exposing just discrete services rather than exposing the entire network. And this is something you're already doing today. Most companies in the world, a high percentage, are using Exchange Server for their email today, and they've already taken the steps to expose that Exchange email to their devices and the web. And so guess what? If you've done that, then you've already followed and know the steps to expose your mobile data out to devices. When I talk about VPN, just depending on the VPN technology you're using, it can be a real hassle for users to fire up a VPN connection in advance and to make that connection and then keep it as they're traveling around the networks. You want it to just work like the internet. It just works, right? You don't do anything. And so with reverse proxying securely that way, the VPN is not required. And remember also, when you use a VPN, you are extending your network out to the device, the whole network. When you're doing reverse proxy through UAG, you're only exposing discrete web services on a particular virtual directory out in an encrypted fashion, and those can only be seen by the app that's calling it. On other there are other platforms where their app store, the applications are not vetted at all. And in fact, I could build an app for this particular platform, and I could have it show up 5 minutes later in their store, and you could download it, and then I could do something unsavory like grab all your contact data and send it off to another country easily. Those kind of unvetted apps are a Trojan horse and probably one of the biggest threats you have to your network beyond the things that you normally think about. So imagine if you had one of those devices and a user is pulling down a game that they thought was easy to use and be a lot of fun. They have no idea that it's really going to inject malware, and then you had to use a VPN connection to get into your network. You've just created a tunnel where a truck could drive through to get into your network, and those kind of that app marketplace, that store on these other platforms, has inadvertently become a Trojan horse backdoor that gets into your network. I don't want to see that happen to your companies or your customers' companies. So I think going on the discrete route is definitely a safer way to go. And let's take a look and see what this looks like now. So now we're just down at the load balanced IIS level, and they're talking through the back firewall and then going through UAG. And you'll have the same thing over in your other data center. So last but not least, you obviously, this wouldn't be a device session if we didn't actually have devices consuming data, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be crazy? So mobile data, what's our little to-do list for this? So we need to consume that REST web service either from an app or from a web browser, like an AJAX call on a browser. We need to deserialize the JSON, because so those the collection of objects, the table, rows, and columns data, into an in-memory object collection that we can actually work with in our app. And then, of course, we need to save it offline. We don't have ubiquitous wireless connectivity. If it's on the web, IE10 supports IndexedDB for large data sets. They're like object stores, and they're indexable, and it runs in the browser, and it's saved offline, even if you restart the browser or shut down the device. And then we have web storage for smaller name value pair, like at 5 meg limits. And then for apps, we have SQL CE, which we've had now since our Windows Phone 7.5. We've talked about how we had SQLite support now. And then we have object serialization, which we've talked about at length in some of our sessions. Then, of course, you need to capture that data. You're pulling data offline. You're manipulating it, maybe adding data, updating it. And then there's business logic running locally on the client. And then you probably need to upload it. It needs to, part of that real-time enterprise, you got to get it back to the office, because you're not going to drive your truck back to the office and input it manually. I did a crazy blog post called Human ETL a while ago, because that's what came to my mind when I watched someone transcribe something they wrote down in paper into a system back at the office in the screen. I hadn't seen that data processing manual thing since the 80s, and I didn't realize it was still around. Apparently it's alive and well in lots of companies today. So human ETL, let's get out of that business. Then, of course, we have to have encryption for our data at rest. We need to have device management that's enforcing security on your devices, enforcing a PIN. You need to have encrypted device. And then you also need to make sure that, you know, if you can have the extra level of encryption if you need to do it yourself, in our case, in isolated storage with your application data. And so this is kind of your end state here. You know, you can't see the arrows because they were white, but mobile devices will be calling and hitting the front firewall to talk to UAG, and then they'll pull that data offline. So let's take a look and see what that looks like. So let's open our third instance of Visual Studio, the one with the emulator. Contoso Fruit. What a great name. Actually, I'll just run this. So we've already seen how we can pull the data back in Internet Explorer. So now we want to pull it back into our app. I'm not going to try to do anything fancy here. I just want to show you the basics that most apps follow, actually, a paradigm. I'm going to download data. I need to save it offline. I need to be able to reload offline data. And in this case, I'm going to serialize them, the collections of objects, as JSON. I need to be able to view it. I need to be able to place an order in an offline state. And then I need to upload that data. So let's start with step one. Let's download the data here. So I'm going to use the web client. All this code is also an example of how things you've already built for Windows Phone 7.5 works today in Windows 8. I took a 7.5 project here, 7.1, and just upgraded it instantly to 8, and it's just working out of the box. So I haven't changed to use any of the new awaits and asyncs yet. I'm just doing what I had before. So I'm using the web client in this case. So in this case, I'm going to point to my local machine. And that same URL that you saw before, Contoso Web API, that I did in the browser. So let's just call that. And notice how I'm instantly transported to my other instance of Visual Studio, where I have a breakpoint to pull back this data. So I don't need to see that again, because we already looked at it. So I'll go ahead and continue. And then I have my callback here. And so I need to check and see, you know, testing for an error. And luckily, we didn't have one. And then here's where things get interesting. So my models, I'm using observable collections instead of generic lists on the device. And Andy talked about these before, because I need to be able to, I'm not necessarily going to illustrate this here, but be able to have that two-way, you know, event firing from the UI to the view models and models to have them update. And so that's why you would use an observable collection. But think of them as a generic list with those extra features. So because what's coming back is just a generic list. So I'm going to create, I've got my serializer, and using of type models project, you know, product, just like you saw on the server side. In this case, I created a singleton called database. And so to kind of act like, I could have used the app dot, you know, XAML CS as well, but I created a singleton for all my database operations, so there'd be only one location that you all services would use. And so I pulled that back. So let's use our tooltips. And if you see that I'm highlighting this local singleton collection, sure enough, everything came back. It deserialized from JSON and looks exactly like I expected it to. It looks just like what we saw on the server side. So let's go ahead and continue. So I've got this data on board, but I need to save it offline because I don't live in a ubiquitously wireless world. So when I save it offline, I'm going to do something similar. You've seen the new version of how this code to serialize collections to objects. This is kind of the older way to do it that's less asynchronous. And so let's step through that a little bit. So here I'm calling, I'm passing this collection. I'm going to jump in here. Yes. And so here's kind of like my boilerplate code of passing in a collection to save and the name, and I'm going to save this to isolated storage. And you can guarantee that right after the session, I'm going to update my code to look just like Andy's because he's got the new stuff. But you notice it also looks pretty darn similar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Keep up the wigglies.
Yeah, you've got to keeping up with the wigglies. Yes, exactly. So, mission accomplished on this thing. I needed to save it offline. But again, I am a stickler for proving that something really happened, so I need to stop the application. And now I'm going to reload it again, start it up, because you need to know that we truly have offline data. So I'm going to reload that offline data. So this time I'm not calling the web services. So we'll go down in here and we'll just hit F11 for this one and say yes to that. And kind of like the examples we showed before, it looks kind of like the reverse. I'm doing defensive programming. I'm testing to make sure the collection is there first. Then I'm going to open it. I've got my serializer, and then I'm going to read object and return that back. All right, so now we have the data. Well, how do we know we have the data? Well, I'm going to hit this view data, and I'm just going to quickly bind this to this list. And so now you see these two lists here, right? I've got products, and as I click on a product, you kind of see the parent-child relationship here, how it shows current quantity and then lets me select a quantity. And then I've got my customers. So this is all the data you saw on SQL Server that I had aggregated from the back-end systems. So I'm going to place an order. So just to make it simple, because I know the ID for all these, apricot's going to be 2. I'm going to select a quantity of 2, and we're going to do it for Jenny. And we know her ID is 2 as well. So I'm going to go ahead and place this offline order here. And we'll step through this really quick. I'm going to go through the observable collection. And I'm going to test to make sure there are actually stuff there. You know, again, more defensive programming. I've got the selected items that I picked from those list views, those list boxes, rather, and to show you what I got there. So just to be sure, the product ID is 2, customer ID that I pulled back is 2, and quantity. This is pretty old school stuff. There's nothing MVVM about this, for sure. And then I'm going to add that to my order collection. And so now I've got an order collection of orders that I want to place. So now and so that's offline as well. So the next thing I want to do now is when I have connectivity, either I know I have connectivity, or you'll have a background thread in your application that will be detecting connectivity for you. Andy talked about how we have those methods in the platform for you to detect if the wireless is there or not. So if it is, then I'm going to upload orders. So in this case, I'm going to go through here. I'm going to look at that order collection, and I'm just going to do the simplest of link queries, which doesn't seem real. And just grab the first one out of the collection because I know that's the one I care about. So here's the order. There it is. Everything's a 2. And then I'm going to post this order. So I'm going to go back. I built a class just around networking. And so I'm using web client again. And so I need to take this collection and I need to serialize these observable collections into JSON to upload. And so that's what I'm doing here. And then I'm going to fire this up. Hit continue, And now look, now we're transported back to the other instance of Visual Studio on the server side. Let me just highlight order to see what I passed in. Well, sure enough, there it is. So we know we've made it to our web service on your back-end system. And so here, I'm just going to do a connection to SQL Server, and I'm just going to do an insert here. You know, I've got all my parameters, execute non-query. So let's run that, and then I get my callback. So now we transport it back to Visual Studio on the client, test to make sure we didn't get an error. Result was true because I sent I'm a total queuing ACK kind of guy, so I need to verify that it actually worked. And then I'm going to remove it from the collection that was locally. So we've unwound that deal. The transaction has happened, had it not happened, we would not have removed that order collection, and you would have been prompted to retry the connection, you know, to make it happen. So there you have it. We've done an offline connection, offline transaction, all those kind of things that you would expect to have on a mobile device when you have a MEAP solution. So let's go back to our presentation here. Alrighty then. I know it's coming up any second now. All right, here we are. So we've completed the whole thing, almost. Here's kind of our complete architecture, our logical architecture. So this is where I put it all together, and you know, it looks crazy, doesn't it? But these are kind of all the different pathways you've seen here that goes through. I guess the one last thing I need to show you is I need to prove to you that the stuff showed up in SQL Server, and it's not a true MEAP system if I can't get that data back to the destination back-end systems, because in this case, it's just like I built a system with SQL Server and I'm talking to it. So let's go to orders and refresh orders, and yes, sure enough, it worked. Customer ID 2, product ID 2, and quantity 2. So that's good. And then let's totally complete the circle with our ETL operations, our back-end adapters. So I'm going to run this again. In this case, you see two red X's, products and customers, but that's because those were going from the back-end systems to SQL, and SQL already has the data, so that's expected. What we're really looking for is the green checkbox from SQL going to the orders data. And then to finish it off, let's take a look at our mainframe access database, which we know is empty right now. And I refresh it, and then there's our order. And so there's hopefully a simple explanation of how to build a mobile enterprise application platform to mobilize your enterprise to hit that top CIO requirement of getting back-end data out to the employees, or partners for that matter, running on their mobile devices. All right, so let's jump back into the presentation here. And I'm going to quickly just run through a few of the features that we've added to facilitate enterprise application deployment now. Now that you've seen what development looks like, and high scale at that, and secure. So let's take a look at what do we have new in the enterprise. So we have this enterprise-wide application distribution now. The key takeaway here, you know, Andy's gone at length talking about the Windows Store. But I've been having customers ask for the last 2 years, how do I do my own private store? I want my own app store in my company. Well, we finally have one for you. And so we're going to let you secure it. We're going to let you manage devices. We're going to let you manage policies, and we're going to let you distribute apps. So enterprise applications here. So when you're doing an enterprise app just for a company, you don't have to go through our store. You don't have to be vetted by Microsoft like you normally do to be published into the Windows Phone Store. We're still going to give you that test kit that Andy described to help you validate the code you've written yourself and all the capabilities. Everything else, nothing changes for enterprise apps. And nothing changes for what you got to do and the quality of your apps for internal. You just don't have to go for our certification, because no one else is going to see your apps, because they're going to be privately distributed inside your company or your customer's company if you're building apps for them or doing consulting work for them. So the enterprise is going to have some keys, and I'm going to walk you through kind of a build slide that kind of shows how we're going to do that, because you're typically the developer is vetted, and the developer pays the money, and the developer gets their ability to do that. This time, the enterprise, the company, has to be. And the devices will be enrolled in a system that's going to allow them to install and run those apps built for that enterprise. That device is going to get a token that says, yes, I can run this app. If a device doesn't have this token, it can't run your enterprise app. So it's going to keep things secure and private. There's that chain of custody going from device all the way up to the CA of the customer out to the vetting that we did. So enterprise publication, one thing I wanted to show you real quick is we have this company hub example, which I think we've shown this to you before in one of our other sessions. But this company hub is might be the first application you deploy to your employees, and this might be where you would list your internal applications to pull down. But we've got great flexibility. Side loading happens. You can deploy an enterprise app through the SD card if your device has it. It doesn't mean the app will run on the SD card. It'll be installed from there and put onto the primary flash. You could be through a web server. It could be through email using our RMS, and encrypting it that way. So there's this enterprise registration that I kind of mentioned that's going to happen, and we're doing that with Symantec. So your enterprise, you might have a Dun & Bradstreet number. You're going to have information that you're going to have to provide to Symantec. They're going to vet your company. And then once they do that, then you're going to get a certificate for the key pair that you're going to have to use for the devices that are be allowed to run your apps, because your app's going to have to have that key, right? So kind of here's the step through there, your IT setup steps. You kind of see all this build slide here going. So the first thing, enterprise registers with the Windows Phone Developer Center. Just like you do as an individual, now the company's going to do this. And then the enterprise downloads some app tools. We notify Symantec of a pending enterprise registration. Symantec is going to vet your enterprise with information that they're going to require from your company to do this. Then the enterprise is going to get this key pair and request a cert from Symantec. Ta-da. And then Symantec checks the vetting is complete, and it's going to generate a cert for your enterprise. And so that kind of completes that. And that's how we keep that chain of security all throughout. It's at the enterprise level, your apps that you're going to build inside your enterprise, not checked by us, but then they're going to have that key pair, and then devices are going to have to enroll. And they will enroll, and we have a way to do it without an MDM, but we have MDM servers. A great solution is Windows Intune. That supports multiple devices, it supports Windows desktops, and it's going to be the way you're going to support Windows 8, Windows RT, like Surface tablets, and you're going to use it to, that's how we're going to manage Windows Phone 8. So you're going to need that, MDM is kind of a part of the whole deal. So enforcing policies, enforcing encryption, enforcing security, and then MDMs like Intune can provide that over-the-air software distribution. It enforces full device encryption, and it can also be used to uninstall apps, and have that separation. So I know we live in a BYOD world of consumerization. So your employees may have their own devices. They may have their apps and their data. You'll be able to deploy your apps and data to their devices. And then if you need to remove it, it just takes care of corporate data and it doesn't mess with their data. So in review, hopefully you've seen how to build the mother of all mobile enterprise application platforms to get you from back-end systems all the way out to your client, whatever that system may be. And likewise, it's easy to do this in Azure as well if you want to do that. In fact, it's easier. It's really hard work that I've learned over the years to build these geo-replicated systems. Azure, I go to a website and say, yeah, I think I'll have 10 of these and that. 5 of these. And
some of them over there.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes it really simple. And now we have a complete enterprise story for corporations, for security, for device encryption, device application deployment. So anyway, I think we have a complete end-to-end story. And
good show.
That's it. Thank you very much. I guess it's time for a break. Au revoir.